This episode of The Interchange is made possible by Absa and Timo.
Hello and welcome to the third episode of what has been a punching season two of The Interchange. We're recording from Cliff Central Studios in the heart of Jozi, and I am your host, Busi Mkhumbuzi. Now, the fourth industrial revolution remains a hot topic for all the right reasons. The world is rapidly changing, and those changes require us to talk about how we're going to ensure that people have the means, the capacity, and skills to fully participate in a digitally driven democracy and economy. One suggestion that has gained a lot of traction is that free internet must be provided to all, particularly those in rural areas, as well as in metros and in public schools, in public clinics, libraries, and all kinds of public institutions. Here to make the case for why free internet must be declared as a universal right is Neo Maswewu, who is a philosophy student, a big, big fan of SNL and cyberpunk, as well as Dan Peter, who is a master's in law student and debater. Dan, we've just heard the good news that you're going to LSC to pursue your master's.
Yes, I am. I don't like mentioning it, but yes, I will be. I'm going in September. I'm very excited.
I mean, how did the thought come about to just apply at the London School of Economics?
No, I have an Arab uncle who was very insistent that I achieve as much as possible. And when I felt like not working, which is most of the time, he was the one who phoned me at all hours of the morning and day to remind me to work.
Reminding you of the school, the stream.
Pretty much Uncle John. So thanks, Uncle John.
Thank you, Uncle John. Here to argue that free internet as a universal right misses the point, we have opposition Tristan Marrow, who is a master's in law student, a social commentator, and a futurist thinker, as well as Umar Bakas, who is a honors in construction management student and a train fanatic. Train fanatic, what is that?
It's just someone who really, really, really likes trains.
Why?
No, man, I think they're just the most efficient and beautiful way to transport from A to B.
That's true.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Insane.
Hoping to get to Japan one day to actually ride some of those trains, man.
Whoa, I guess the president knows who to talk to in terms of his dream that he presented at State of the Nation about building this fourth industrial revolution trip, blah, blah, blah. Anyway.
Same process.
Also in studio with us is episode expert and creative solutionist Nolo Mokwena. Nolo is the chief executive of Grind Africa, a pan-African advisory group helping corporates and governments better leverage the continent's youthfulness. Nolo, good to have you in studio.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Awesome. You're at the forefront of building a digital platform for youth. Are young people being empowered for the fourth industrial revolution? And what role could free internet play?
That's such a big question because I think it's actually two-sided. The first one is we need to talk about the fourth industrial revolution in the context of industrial revolutions. My biggest challenge with it in Africa is that we've missed the third. Right.
Wow. So
I mean, we're still trying to achieve free internet. Right. And so guys are already talking about the fourth. The other thing is that every industrial revolution means very different things for all the nations. So for the first industrial revolution, what it meant for England was very different for what it meant, say, for Asia. And the biggest challenge in Africa is, I believe, the fourth industrial revolution for us is actually about our minerals. And so cobalt, coltan, lithium for our batteries, all that is found in Africa. And I tell people, if you don't believe me, Elon Musk, who's arguably the poster child of the fourth industrial revolution, 3 weeks ago just said Tesla is going into mining because he wants to control the supply of the lithium for his batteries in the cars. And where is he going to find that? It's either going to be Zambia, Zimbabwe, or the northern parts of Limpopo. Those are the only three parts that have enough for that. And so for Africa, in terms of resource maximization, the fourth industrial revolution for us should be about maximizing our minerals, using that as an economic catalyst to then define our own future, whatever that looks like. And so that's just a conversation exclusively talking about industrial revolutions in the context for Africa. And so I believe that's something to talk about. Now, free internet, it's cool, you know, like that's just my opinion. Like, you know, like it's cool, whatever, but technology is not value in itself. It sort of augments value. Yeah. And so my question is, when people talk about, okay, let's use the internet to educate children, I tell them, well, it's a delivery method. let's talk about the content we're using to educate children. I think that's a bigger conversation Africa should be having, South Africa should be having. And I think when you talk about free internet, it's great in terms of a modus. It's an augmenter of value, but it's not a creator of value within itself. And I think when we have that conversation, we really limit the scope of how this applies to us. And so that would be my opinion in terms of doing that, because inevitably, regardless of which way we go, we need clear deliverables and measurements of what this looks like and what progress looks like for us. And so that's the short of it.
Let's hope we get those clear deliverables and outcomes in the speeches that are going to be presented today. And we will come back to that first point you made about how, you know, when you watch Black Panther and you look at the Kingdom of Wakanda, it's just that. It's a fiction kingdom. Until you hear that argument and you're like, what? We could actually build our own. But let's get into the debate. And before then, a quick rundown of the rules. We're using the British parliamentary format. We have four speakers, two on each side. The first two are proposition and the last two are opposition. In terms of speaking order, prop one is going to speak first and op two is going to speak last. Each speaker has 4 minutes to deliver their case. In between the first and the last minute, the opposing team may ask points of information. Are we ready?
Yeah.
Cool. I'm going to hand over to the first speaker of proposition, Nebo Hiahia.
Okay. So I think the first thing that we need to do in this debate is to establish that there are no sacred cows in the fourth industrial revolution. No country has leverage over establishing some kind of competitive advantage without actually prioritizing the most basic economic right of the 21st century, which is the internet. I don't think we ought to look at this debate in a simplistic term and just assume that the internet will be used for bad means in and of themselves. I think it's been an incredible liberator for a lot of people. It has allowed many people in the digital economy to access economic benefits and to become socially savvy people. In this era that we're dealing with, there are two fundamental things that we need to question, right? The first one is, why do we think that economies will grow in an exponential rate if we prioritize the internet? But secondly, what have governments, specifically in developing countries, done in the absence of the internet? And I think you'll realize that in the end, they haven't done much. And I'll start with that point first. Structurally speaking, any economy will not be able to grow without actually creating incentives for the penetration of the internet. That's the same reason why you see Google building underwater cables from Cape Town to Nigeria to Spain, because they recognize that the next frontier of the economy is not going to be in Europe, it's not going to be in the Western world, but in Africa. And specifically when we speak about countries like Ghana, South Africa, and Kenya, you'll realize that the structural impediments that exist is not so much that those people aren't able to create jobs, but they're not able to create environments where those people are able to create jobs. So why is the internet specifically important in this context then?
1 minute up.
The first one is that the internet is an economic incentive for industry and government. So that's the first key distinguishing part we want to make. We can recognize on their side of the house in opposition that they're probably going to argue that the government needs to do a lot more, that private business can still power this, but we're saying that they need to prioritize it simply because of the fact that for them to grow in a digital economy, they will not be able to participate without some kind of fervent prioritization of the internet. What does this mean? A lot of governments will not be able to create jobs in the fourth industrial revolution. The age of deindustrialization suggests that people have to become self-starters. That's the reason why we have companies like Tsimong, people taking their own destinies in their own hands and not working for corporate companies anymore. But because secondly, we think for you to become an ableist in this environment where disruption is the key term, the internet is the best way to not only create leverage when it comes to economies, but secondly, to learn specific skills the way in which you can do it. Note to your panel that before the internet actually existed in countries like Senegal, they had a very, very small tech sector. With the prioritization of the internet in cities like Dakar, you had bigger tech incubators, you had more people actually realizing realizing their true potential, becoming coders, programmers, and even successful entrepreneurs.
1 minute left.
We think that in the 21st century, that is the biggest African story we can tell. But more important, ladies and gentlemen, we think that the idea of exponentialism is something very important. Once you leverage the internet, you allow for primary sector economies, low-income economies, to actually leapfrog a lot of the industrial revolutions that were spoken about in the context, to actually be transcended. That means you can compete, therefore, in the fourth industrial revolution. Look at countries like China, for instance. Countries in many ways that were basically forsaken by Time Magazine, etc., but today are the leading hallmarks of what it means to be a successful economy because they prioritize things like access to the internet, but more importantly, recognize that technology and the fourth industrial revolution will not be achievable without any internet at all. Tristan.
Out of order?
Out of order. Okay.
You're in flow.
I'm in flow.
And just unfortunately, though, your time is up. There goes your 4 minutes.
That was so mean.
Tristan, I'm now going to hand over to you to oppose the opening case by proposition here.
All right. Don't get me wrong. The internet is great. And I really wish that everybody had access to the internet. But you know what's even more great? Having electricity to be able to power your computer need to get the internet. Having reliable water. Having reliable road infrastructure. That is what's great. And that is what's needed. And that is what governments need to prioritize, especially in developing countries. Because unfortunately, what my job is today is to be the parent in the store where Nell's asking for a candy bar and I'm having to realize there's only 200 Rand left and 10 days left of the month. So what we need to understand is that developing governments have limited budget. And with that limited budget, we need to be careful about what we prioritize. And what we don't need to prioritize is something which, number one, private industry is already taking care of. Noah himself points out that Darfur, out of all places, already has internet access. A place which was a war-torn village which was ravaged by warmongers has internet access.
1 minute up.
Because of private industries. So it is coming, whether it is on the ground or whether it is in the sky from SpaceX's Starlink program or from Amazon's new satellite constellation. Right? It is coming. So it is not something that government needs to worry about. What government needs to worry about is, as I said in the beginning, making sure that we have sustainable and reliable electricity sources. Right? Making sure that the ecosystem around the internet can facilitate all the things that you want to do. Because it doesn't matter how much of a, you know, entrepreneurial get-go you have and how much internet access you have, if you don't have reliable rail networks to get you into Sandton when you're living outside of Johannesburg. That's what we need to prioritize as government. And as developing governments, we just don't have the money to make sure that we prioritize internet infrastructure and road infrastructure. We need to pick a struggle, and the one we need to pick is the one that private industry isn't already doing now.
You haven't actually shown material benefits on your side of the house. You're just giving us a lot of suggestions about what ought to happen. But secondly, everything that you're suggesting is not mutually exclusive from what you're saying. We can still prioritize primary infrastructural development while actually prioritizing the internet. The biggest eater of money in African states is not necessarily a lack of funding. It's blatant corruption.
Yes, that's fine. And we can try and address blatant corruption. But what we need to also understand is that even if we address blatant corruption, there isn't as much money as developed countries. That is a fact. And as to the material gain out of things like electricity, well, I would hope that the readers are smart enough to understand that you need the electricity before you can have the computer connected to the internet. I think the material gain is very obvious in basic critical infrastructure. And that is what we need to prioritize. Because at the moment, there are many places in South Africa, which is a reasonably well-developed developing country, which don't have road access, which don't even have telephone cables to carry your internet. That is what we need to understand is something that needs to be prioritized. Because it doesn't matter how much information you have access to, it doesn't matter how many clients you try and connect to, if you're unable to move your product through a reliable infrastructure, if you're unable to keep your servers active with electricity, then the internet is for naught. And that is why that is what they need to prioritize, not something which private industry is already prioritizing.
Thank you so much for that speech, Tristan. I'm now going to hand over to the proposition speaker, to Dan, to close the proposition case here.
Thank you. So it is quite difficult to hear the main thrust of opposition's case through the sounds of Tristan's condescension, but we think that's kind of indicative of the problem in their case, right? Is that they've missed the point here. The point here isn't that developing nations and the governments of developing nations are going to be putting huge amounts of money into internet infrastructure, is that they prioritize internet access. And prioritizing internet access isn't something as simplistic as fiscal allocation. It means prioritizing it in terms of cutting bureaucratic red tape. It means prioritizing it in terms of cutting the corruption that disincentivizes companies from coming and investing in the country. And it means prioritizing it in terms of making your country a friendly destination for the NGOs, startups, and companies who want to invest and create this infrastructure, which Tristan says is happening in these countries. So we think going forward in this debate, we need to have a clear context of what prioritization means. And it doesn't mean spending money that you would be spending on education and healthcare, because as Tristan says, the private companies are the ones doing that expenditure. It means working with those private ventures to enable internet access. So that's where we need to be in this debate. So
We think
in terms of the this matter about enabling things like electricity access and water access and road access and things like that, not only is it not mutually exclusive, we think it's actually part and parcel of prioritizing internet access. Just as Tristan said, in order to have proper internet access, we need to have things like electricity. What that means is that prioritizing internet access as a government doesn't mean the government providing the routers, for example. It means government making sure that there's electricity in place. It means government making sure that there are roads in place to deliver the infrastructure, things like that, right? That's part of prioritizing internet access, and we're not sure why opposition would be opposed to that. We think if you prioritize internet access, the virtuous cycle enables those kinds of things to be developed in the first place. We think, secondly, in terms of this virtuous cycle, it's really important to remember that job creation is something that's fundamental to enabling people to access many of the socioeconomic rights that Tristan is talking about. If it's true that governments are often not as good in developing countries, according to them, as enabling those rights as governments in developed countries are, then we think it's really important that if the government isn't going to give all those rights to people, that we enable people to access those rights themselves. And part of that is creating entrepreneurial ventures. Part of that is creating employment through those entrepreneurial ventures and allowing people to pay for services, right? We think that's part and parcel of it. And we think it would be quite bizarre if opposition would deny that the job creation of internet access wouldn't take place. In fact, the World Economic Forum recently predicted that if internet penetration was increased to 75% of the world's population, of the developing world's population, that 140 million jobs would be created. And I'll take you in a second once I'm finished with this argument. So we think that it's really important that we understand that job creation is not something that we should be weighing against electricity, not something we should be weighing against education and healthcare. It's part and parcel of it. And we think to deny people in the developing world access to that because we patronize them and say that, no, you need to get electricity first, is really missing the point of the industrial revolution. Yes.
I think Daniel needs to pick a struggle, because quite frankly what he's doing now is he's diluting prioritizing internet down to such a basic level that he's essentially saying, let's try and have everything.
Thanks.
What prioritization does mean is that
you
need
your point
to give up other things for it.
Order,
you
1 minute
your
left.
Point. Thank you. So I think that's quite bizarre, Tristan. So prioritization can definitely entail things that are quite large, like cutting corruption, cutting bureaucratic red tape. That's not a diluted version of prioritization. That's a pretty big thing for a government to do. It just doesn't require them to spend as much money as you're saying they have to. Lastly, we think in terms of active citizenship, one of the first things that governments go for when they're trying to suppress access to information and dissent in a country is the internet. We've seen it in Sudan. We've seen it in China. We've seen it all over the world. That tells you that it's really important, if we want to have active citizenship and participatory democracy, that people are able to access information. And part of that means enabling access to the internet. So we need opposition to come up and tell us why they wouldn't want developing nations to create more active citizens, why they wouldn't want governments to enable that. We think in terms of education, in terms of access to information, the primary means of delivering that access to information is through
your
the internet.
Your time is up. Thank you so much, Dan. I'm going to now hand over to our final speaker from opposition, who's also going to close the debate. Umar, choo-choo away.
Thank you for that. But I think it's weirdly, it's quite interesting. Last time Dan and I was in this room, he was actually arguing for the argument of that the introduction of ICT technology into places like Africa would actually result in the lower classes, the people we are arguably trying to help in this debate,
the beauty of debating,
ultimately ending up in a place that is somewhere we don't want to see them, right? So Neo says something interesting in today's debate, right? He talks about basic human rights. And I think, to be honest, and I'm on the side of Tristan, I think basic human rights are things like basic primary school school education, things like basic infrastructure. I don't really see access to internet as a fundamental basic human right as these things, right? And that's very important as side opposition to today's debate, right? He talks about the exponential rate of growth in these countries, right? And this idea of job creation, right? Something we see throughout their side. They like to throw around terms like mutually exclusive, right? Ultimately, we need to understand something that, like Dan says, he throws around the statistics, 75%. ICT technologies only result in job creation and active benefits to societies once they reach the massive critical mass of 75%. That's the issue, right? The problem The problem with that is that this ICT technology, this prioritization, is no savior for developing nations, right? The fact is, we hold it out as the savior, but we find that there, like, the basic things that we need are things like landline development, things that's like basic mobile technology. That is something that exists and actually facilitates it, right? So the expert tells us, like, the prioritization of mining, right, a resource we have massive access to, and the resource we have massive access to that we can actually facilitate and generate massive amounts of economic capital to develop nations, is something we should prioritize. And this is something we see within the government's mandate that can actively be incorporated into the facilitation of these basic human rights, right? We need to understand that Tristan says, right, we acknowledge that this is important, we acknowledge that it can result in job creation, but not now, later down the track. Because, to be honest, right, if you want to create job creation, if you want to prioritize job creation, if you want to prioritize these people being able to have an entrepreneurial spirit, right, Dan talks about this like it's easy, just cut the bureaucratic red tape, right? Something that's almost impossible to do in these developing nations, right? Otherwise we would have seen it happening up to this point, right? Wrong we need down. To understand that when they talk about the creation of active citizens, I don't think that's dependent on I don't think that's at all dependent on ICT systems, right? And if you want to, you can just POI me and then we can talk about it then. But we need to realize, right, like more traditional sources, right, things of like literally trade between nations, something that isn't massively dependent on these things, right, a basic education and literally proper implementation of the rule of law and checks and balances within these countries is much more important to the development of these countries, right? That's something we can actively see creating tangible benefits. Because the fact of the matter is, when a country's let me finish this point. When a country is actively sitting at like ICT implementation or like internet access of 23%, and you want to get them to a place like 75%, you're talking about years and years of development. And yes, I understand we need to move forward with that, but at the same time, there are people walking kilometers upon kilometers to get basic to get clean drinking water. Let's take you quickly.
Sorry, you just mentioned trade between.
Oh damn it! God damn it. Again, you're walking kilometers upon kilometers to get access to clean drinking water, right? Yeah. People are literally getting older every day without access to basic education, right? This is something that I think is much more. It's not really an idealistic thing, but it's something that needs to be prioritized in the short term. Because the fact of the matter is, if people are getting older, if people don't have this basic access to things, we see like people almost age out, right? And it entrenches all of the things we're trying to oppose in today's motion, right? We need to understand that internet is great, but it's not great right now. We need to understand that focusing on things like trade between nations, getting people education, and even just focusing on the resource that we have strength in, like our mineral wealth in Africa, is something that's largely important to the developing nations. And ultimately, that's where the debate falls. If you want to see development in these nations, you need to focus on the grassroots stuff. And it's one of those like stock debating arguments that we always come back to. But it's because it's the truth, right? And that's ultimately where Dan falls short.
Your time is up, unfortunately. We have a lot to unpack, right? And that's why the post-debate discussion is always so great. But Nolo, just your initial thoughts to break the tension.
I love it, actually. I really like the perspectives. I think in the context of Africa, actually, like when you started to bring in about citizens and participating in democracies, etc., I think it's important. But I'm still taking it in, Busi. You guys did really well. You guys did really, really well. I think you brought nice meat and depth to it. But I think it still points to the same thing, right? What are we hoping the fourth industrial revolution does for us? Yeah. And I think that's the deeper conversation we need to actually concentrate on, because I think then it'll bring a lot of clarity in terms of what we need to be prioritizing and what we need to do. But it was really fantastic. Mm.
And in terms of that, in fact, on that point, and specifically to Neo and Dan, you know, what are we hoping people are going to do with all this internet, especially considering that there aren't any accompanying digital literacy programs in education curricula to introduce children to useful ways of using the internet? For all I know, if I give free access to everyone to get 500 megabytes, you know, how does that move the continent forward?
So I think just like as a principle, it's important just to underscore that we do not live in an ideal world.
Yeah.
There will always be policy shortfalls, and no government, I think, in the 21st century can ever say that they've done anything perfectly.
Mm.
But if you look at what the internet has done specifically for a lot of young people in countries that A, have a lot of structural impediments, B, education systems are falling apart, it can offer infinite amount of opportunities, such as teaching yourself a decent amount of lessons, things in languages, things in coding, things in mathematics. Mm. All those things did not exist before. Mm. And whether it's private industry or government, I think there is a conversation to be had about whether those things, albeit if they did not exist, those people would be at a better place. And I think you will find that the benefits outweigh the negatives at this point.
Dan?
Yeah. I just wanted to add one little thing, and I completely agree with Noah. But I think we also have to be careful not to place an unfair burden on children, and especially children in developing countries. I think we don't expect children in Europe, for example, not to use some of their Wi-Fi, not to use some of the data on watching YouTube videos, for example. And I think just as an ethical or moral concern, I think as long as we make sure that some of the use of the internet is productive, I don't really have a problem if some children in Africa and Asia are using their data on something that
because
are not
because they're children,
right?
Yeah. You know, but the strong contention between you, Dan, and Tristan, was this issue of striving to provide versus being capable of providing. Does it matter when we're talking about rights?
That's actually a very good question. Just to clarify, do you mean striving in terms of who's providing?
Yeah, or? I mean, does it matter if we're able to actually provide something when we're talking about rights? Does it matter that a government is able to actually provide that right? Or do we just want to declare that it's a right and hope that at some point, you know, the state would be able to?
Well, look, I think if we look at the context of how most rights are enacted, most countries are moving towards a model where the absolute provision of the right is less important than the progression towards the provision of that right. Mm. And I think setting it as a right that we aim towards or strive towards is really important, even if we don't achieve full internet penetration. I think having a legal benchmark by which you can take the government to court and say you haven't made active steps towards the realization of internet access is more important than saying, well, you know, in 5 years' time, we need to make sure that everyone is connected to the internet.
But I think what Uma was saying, and Uma, I mean, you can also add some weight to this, and it's something we saw recently in a Tsimung program where a really smart girl, part of the Limpopo team, contrasted France's right to disconnect with the fact that in South Africa or in the rest of the continent, you likely have a 50% unemployment rate. And that highlights the fact that some things can't necessarily be universal. So France has progressed to the extent that they can do things like discussing right to something like disconnecting from the working world at 5 o'clock being an actual right. But can you even talk about that within the context of Africa? And, you know, I think when you speak about prioritization and sort of thing, that's what you were speaking to.
Yeah, I think it's again, it's difficult sometimes to place like to me, like the right to disconnect doesn't really make sense in the context of Africa. Right.
Yeah.
Now, I think.
Yeah.
I think it's. I mean, I think in this debate, I found myself arguing against something that I don't particularly agree with. In that, I do think that like the wealth of like free information and free tools on the internet means that any sort of access means development for someone. But I do think there is a weight to the argument that literally sometimes providing I do think one comes at the cost of the other. Mm. It's either you provide basic human rights or you prioritize it. I don't think you can have both. So I think ultimately I fall in the camp that says provide for people the basic human rights that they deserve.
Yeah, and I mean, we could be skipping crucial steps, right, in the developed world. I'm thinking about the backlog in terms of providing other universal rights or constitutional rights or civil rights, in particularly for African countries. Because, Dan, I mean, you argued against this, but let's be honest, prioritization happens within a constraint, or else it wouldn't be prioritization.
So look, I think there's two things. I think the first thing is that we need to make sure that we don't view development as a completely linear process, right?
Okay.
We don't always have to follow the exact same process that Europe followed in order to develop.
Mm.
But I think the other thing is that often in terms of demanding service delivery, having access to internet, and especially in terms of being able to enable public gatherings and protest and access to information about failure to deliver services, is really important for demanding from the government they enact those rights. because it's a lot easier for the government to suppress protests when those protests are only localized in small areas because people can't connect with people in other areas to demand their access to services.
Something we also forget is that, you know, again, I also found myself the wonderfuls of debating on the other side of what I actually believe. Because I think what we forget is the internet's a great enabler, right? And so even though, yes, there's a lot of infrastructure challenges and there's a lot of, you know, kind of areas from the third industrial revolution where Africa is still trying to catch up, the internet can actually help in a lot of that. There's a brilliant story, I fortunately can't remember the guy's name, but there's a brilliant story of a guy in Kenya whose village had no electricity access and who, through using the internet and instructional videos on the internet, was able to build a wind turbine, or in fact a couple of wind turbines, and provide electricity for his village. And so I think if we encourage internet access, and I would actually go so far as to say make it a basic human right that people should have access to internet at no cost to them, I think that can help in a lot of the challenges which Africa still needs to work on, because it takes that burden off. Well, government would still have a burden to try and fix those issues, but it also gives tools to citizens to try and sort out those issues themselves, which I suspect would probably be a quicker resolution to the problems than waiting for government.
I don't know if I'm convinced personally, because when I think about internet blackouts, you know, that's a scary reality that I think we need to grapple with more in depth. Government providing internet for, you know, a disparaged country or war-torn country also means the government being able to literally control the very tool. So is it even a real tool?
I think to that I'd probably say that even in China, which is one of the most heavily restricted internet environments in the world, people have had unparalleled access to external sources of information. And generally when it comes to mass censorship, because the internet blackouts don't last for as long as internet censorship does. Even under mass amounts of internet censorship, people find ways to still communicate and spread information. So I think I'd probably think of a lack of access to internet as a complete permanent internet blackout. And
you can't have a blackout if you don't have internet, it's true.
So say we all agreed with Prop, which we probably do. How do we roll this out? And I want to rope in Nolo here. I saw one interesting suggestion that free Wi-Fi should be regarded as a basic municipal service and run as a public utility on your public utility bill alongside water, electricity, refuse, and et cetera. What do you think of that? Or what other models do you think would work? I mean, if you were consulting a company or a philanthropic organization or even government itself, you know, how would you help us untangle this knot?
I think, first of all, we need to talk about the structure of how the internet actually works. And so basically how it works is there's an infrastructure that somebody owns, and on that infrastructure, there's a service provider that runs on that. And so one of the biggest challenges in Africa is that the infrastructure layout is owned by private companies. And so the biggest challenge now is that even in nations where the government is saying, we want to provide the internet, it doesn't make sense for them to lay out the infrastructure that already exists there. And so for me, that's actually the first challenge, is that inevitably, even if the government does say they'll provide it, they're essentially paying the same people who are benefiting by not providing internet because they make sure the costs are high. And so that in itself, for me, is a philosophical challenge. It's like, okay, where do I go? You know, do I pay the guys? Do I pay the bad guys? Or do we kick them out and do what Julius says? Shut up, my boy. But and so that is the first thing. The second thing is, I do think that Wi-Fi can be cheap. The biggest challenge in South Africa is that we have an economy where there, in every sector there are three or four big players. Whether someone wants to bid it or not, they're all colluding on the price. And so internet can be astronomically cheaper in South Africa, but they'll make sure that it isn't, because their business model is based on exclusivity. And so, yeah, sure, provided it's great, it's going to provide the access. And we've seen great things like in Tshwane, there's free Wi-Fi. I think parts of Braam as well, I've been there. You know, it's great, but sometimes it's spotty. I believe it's
the other side of the coin of nationalizing infrastructure.
100%.
The government doesn't have the best track record in running infrastructure.
They really don't, because as well, post-1994, there was such a huge gap between the experts and the politicians. And we were hoping that that gap would close over the last 25 years, and it just hasn't.
It hasn't, yeah.
Right. I think there's a few institutions like the Concord or whatever, sure, or like the Treasury, But the truth is generally across the board, like our Minister of Telecoms is absolutely clueless. And I'll say this with confidence. She is clueless about what's actually happening in the space. And so that is a challenge. And I think, yeah, roll it out, whatever. But I think those, sometimes it's spotty. I tell my friends that I'm pretty sure there's someone at one of the big service providers going, no, shut them up today a little bit, you know, make sure, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, just for control. Yeah, just for control. You
there's
know?
Also the and argument that spotty internet is better than no internet again.
No, right. So it's that catch 22. But for me, I think when you understand the economics of internet, I'd go, shucks, we've allowed guys like DFA, Liquitel, to own the infrastructure. And that fundamentally is the biggest challenge we have in Africa, because we're either going to buy it back at a huge premium or we have to work with them, which is still going to bed with guys who are a lot bigger and actually understand what's happening. And that gap between the expert and the politician won't help us with that.
I think this was an incredibly interesting conversation. What I found interesting is that the lack of access to internet may actually limit the average person's access to other universally guaranteed rights. Yeah. So we live in interesting times, because a few years ago, no one would have agreed that internet is intrinsic to us as human beings. But here we are, right? 2.9 billion people in the world today use the internet as the preferred mode for political participation, for education, for employment, commerce, and personal activity. Therefore, internet can arguably be described as a basic requirement for social inclusion and economic participation and humanness. I was just reading up an interesting article about how technology is fundamentally changing what it means to be human, and is fundamentally changing what self-actualization means as we know it. And so I want to find out, as we close today's debate, how has the internet enhanced your human journey? I'm going to start with Uma and go all around the table.
Damn, I was hoping you weren't going to ask me first. I don't know, really. I think, for me, like, it was weird. I had a weird experience yesterday in that I actually just deleted Instagram off my phone because I felt arguably too connected to everyone around me. And I think that's something that you can kind of contrast with having abundant access to people. And I think while it has allowed me fundamentally to experience life through a different lens, experience life with a large amount of people who I'd have never met otherwise. And I think that's something that has fundamentally changed who I am. I think the right to disconnect is so important, right? Even this morning I woke up and I didn't check Instagram, and it was a great feeling, you know? And I think that's also important. So for me, the internet right now is a bit of a double-edged sword.
Tristan?
My one's simple, and I unfortunately had to discover this yesterday morning when, and I think anybody can relate to this who has a cell phone and whose battery runs dead and they don't have a charging cable anywhere near them, that anxiety that you feel.
Yeah.
And it made me realize how much the communication element which the internet facilitates, that being able to just quickly, you know, send my dad a message saying, hey, listen, I'm okay, everything is okay. I think that's the ability to communicate with people no matter where they are. I've got family who are overseas who I can, you know, see right now. So I think that communication aspect has probably been the most fundamental impact on my humanness that the internet has had. The ability to learn and speak to people anywhere.
Sure. Dan?
So I am queer. I'm very gay. Surprise. importantly, I think linked to that, the internet has helped me access dignity, especially when I was a teenager. I grew up in a very restrictive environment in really all facets. And I think without being able to access the internet and realize that there wasn't something wrong with me and that I was loved and all those things, especially because I'm my religion is very small and that there's no one in my religion who I know who's like me. I think being able to access that was really important in keeping me alive, firstly, and making sure that I was someone who felt confident and secure in my own existence.
Sure. Powerful. And Neil?
I don't know. I think the most important thing to think about in this question is what would your life look like without the internet? And I think for me it would be just like valuable lessons about the outside world. I think for someone who's always been very curious about a lot of other things, you just start to realize that it's okay to have niche interests and to prioritize them in a way. So things like civic engagement, for instance, I think they wouldn't have been possible without the existence of the internet, a marketplace of ideas where you can learn many different perspectives about those things. And we can talk about old-fashioned styled libraries, but I think there's nothing more empowering being a young person than just swiping through your phone and finding exactly what you want half a world away. Mm-hmm. And I think just like general efficiency is just something I'm very grateful for with regards to the internet.
Yeah, no,
and I hope it penetrates through to other things.
Yes.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
Nola, would you like to add?
Yeah, mine's not that deep. You know? Like the James are deep, you know. Yeah, just the internet gave me an access to chat to, you know, to the girl I wanted to chat to. Yeah. I mean, for me, it's just like, you know, like, I'm just going to keep it simple in that regard. Like, you know, I think everything they've said is absolutely true and phenomenal. But I think it does make our life easier. I think when you talk about it in this context, though, it's, you know, moving a general population forward. I think that's a bigger conversation. But I'm just grateful that I could highlight that girl. Shout out, B.
Shout out to
the girl. Shout out to
her. Well, hopefully she's one of many listeners enjoying this debate, episode 3 of the Interchange Season 2. It was a fantastic one, and I hope that you continue to share your journeys of how the internet has enhanced your human journey, but also what you think regarding making the internet a human right. That was the Interchange, and see you next time.
This was another thought-provoking debate made possible by APSA and Simung, amplifying the voices of young people. The Interchange, seeing Africa through a youthful lens.